Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. The signs of climate change are everywhere, and Central Asia is one of the regions of the world that is predicted to be hit the hardest. Already there is evidence. Central Asia is again registering record high temperatures this summer, in some places eclipsing record temperatures set just one or two summers ago. And along with these high temperatures, there are accompanying problems with providing water and electricity. Power shortages were once associated with winter months in Central Asia, but now the increased demand for electricity in the summer is straining the abilities of the energy infrastructure in the region. And to discuss all this, I am joined by Nurzat Abdurasulova, president of Unison Group, a Bishkek-based strategic advisory firm on sustainable opportunities; Farouk Yusufi, the director of RFARL's Turkmen service, known locally as Azadlik; and we're hoping to be joined shortly by Alisher Siddiq, the director of RFARL's Uzbek service, known locally as Azadlik. Thank you for joining me. And Nurzat, I'd like to start with you. Kyrgyzstan just declared a three-year energy emergency situation that starts on August 1st. Most of Kyrgyzstan's domestic electricity production comes from hydropower plants, and it's been another dry year. Could you first tell me about the water situation in Kyrgyzstan at this moment, please?
Hello, Bruce. Thank you so much. So Kyrgyzstan water situation is pretty much connected with the electricity, because 90% of the electricity generation comes from the hydropower stations. And for the last years, droughts have been happening severe in Kyrgyzstan. So we have been already experiencing the lack of the less precipitation, snows in this winter time, and rains in the summertime. And the water inflow only depends now mostly on from the glaciers. And glaciers is also decreasing drastically for the last 30 years. So from this point of view, we can our real life already see that how much water decrease already happening. And our weather is happening also very hot, because heat waves is increasing every year. So according to our experts, meteorologists, 20 years ago, it used to be the heat waves happening in the summer about the 10 days. Now we have about the 30 days. So which is also actually leading into the situation that we have a lot of problem with the water. And the water in Kyrgyzstan is not only about the energy, it's also about the agriculture. You know, we are agricultural country. So that's why it's also the problem more deeper in a way that it's a water, energy, and food nexus. So it's an emergency situation is already really showing that the serious situation with the energy supply in the country. So we expect that because of the problems with the water collection in the water reservoirs, we will be having the problem with the water, like electricity generation in generally. And demand is quite increasing. So it's quite changing, actually, in Kyrgyzstan, energy balance. Because if before it used to be that most of the energy consumption comes to the businesses and industrial sector, now over the 60% of the electricity consumption is actually the public. It's a building sectors. So it's because of the people now needs more electricity for their air conditioning, for their heating in the winter. Also, there is a lot of now new devices when you need the use of electricity. And this is already bringing into the new challenge for our energy system to provide the reliable electricity supply, not only dependent from the hydropower, but also diversifying the sector. And emergency situation in the energy sector is now pretty much connected with that within the 3 years, we have to diversify our electricity supply sector with the renewable energies.
Mm-hmm, great, thank you. And we're going to get to renewable energies in the show a little bit later. Farouk, downstream, you're way downstream. Kyrgyzstan's up in the mountains. If they don't have water, the situation is surely much worse down at the end of the river. Can you tell us a little bit about the situation with agriculture and water in Turkmenistan this summer?
Yeah, it's as you rightly pointed, it's getting worse by day, like every year. Last year, it was better. I mean, it was not perfect, but it was better. But this year, the farmers, they are telling us that they never seen a situation like this, when most of the fields, wheat or cotton fields, they are not, water is not reaching those fields, and they are desperate. And it's not only in agriculture, it's also like drinking water is hit by the situation. People are complaining that they, like in the apartment buildings, including in Ashgabat, they are left for hours without water. And when like such incidents happen, usually the local authorities, they organize transporting of water in containers or in cisterns. And that's not the case this year. I mean, they are not able to supply population with water. So the situation is unprecedented this year, and we don't know what happens next year. Maybe it will be worse if the measures are not taken.
Okay, thanks, Farouk. And Nurzat, Farouk was just talking about drinking water. Now, running water to buildings was a problem in Kyrgyzstan this summer. Have they made any progress on that?
Yes. We had the first time, I think, that had also the problem in the capital city, the problem with the drinking water supply. And it was also drastic because it was pretty much connected, actually, with the climate change. Bishkek water, drinking water supplies happen from the underground water. And then because of the climate in the mountains was cold, but in the downstream, in the valleys, it was so hot. We had a problem actually with the melting the ice and glaciers in the mountains. So there was not actually enough water flow into the into the underground water. So there was quite a problem with this water supply. And this is already led into the discussion about that how actually that we are well prepared for this kind of the situation. And there was even some protests of the people about that this providing the water supply into the some living areas. And this is already shows that we will be having the challenge not only there with the energy but also the with the even the supplying of the drinking water. And I think that this is also should lead us now to thinking about that how to not only improve the infrastructure of the water supply, but also about the how to make sure that we actually use efficiently our water, you know, in a way that the city is growing, there is some internal migration, people moving to the cities. And then it means also that our actually the water energy demand is increasing. So in a way that we should actually bring this very close coming challenge in Central Asian cities.
Okay, great, thank you. Farouk, can you follow up on that a little bit with what's the situation with drinking water for people in Turkmenistan these days? I mean, you mentioned that they didn't have it and the trucks were showing up, but how often does this happen? Do we have any idea what it's like in smaller cities?
Yeah, unfortunately, it became very frequent. In Ashgabat, like from Ashgabat, we get it like every 2 or 3 days. Our correspondents say, oh, we were left without water for over 20 hours, for example. The other day, we had that report. But in smaller cities, the situation is even worse. And it seems like authorities at the moment are not able to manage the situation or to find any solutions. And it seems that they need help from outside, expertise from outside in order to tackle the situation. But of course, as you know, in Turkmenistan, they never do that. They never, as they say, take the problems out of the country. The situation is deteriorated by their behavior. But the as you know, the situation is not good. And we reported, like, in the past several months, we've been reporting about this situation on the Amudarya River, when where Taliban government in Afghanistan is trying to take a considerable amount of water for their own purposes. And next week, at least in the beginning of August, as you know, the presidents of three countries, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan, will meet in Ashgabat. And most likely, the purpose of the summit will be the water issue. So the gathering of the heads of states shows how worrying the situation is.
Thank you. And, you know, let me follow up with that a little bit, because there's another problem that's associated with the rapid decrease in the amount of water in the region. And that's these dust storms, which are now hitting Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan and did not in the past. Can you talk a little bit about those dust storms, and how are they becoming more frequent?
Yes, they are. It's not only Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, it's also Tajikistan. We see literally every week dust storms in this part of the region, dust storms in that part of the region. Yeah, they became frequent, and people in Turkmenistan, at least, they blame it for this silly and stupid decision by authorities to chop down the trees in big quantities, like over the past decade or so. And yeah, but I think also it's not only the trees that are, like, they of course contribute, but the changing climates and change in the water resources are contributing greatly to this situation.
Okay, thank you. And Alisher Sadiq, welcome. Can you bring us up on what's happening with what's the water situation in Uzbekistan these days? How much water is there, and how's it affecting agriculture and also the people's ability to get drinking water in their apartments?
Yeah, I mean, as this is like a regional problem, as you rightly pointed out. So Uzbekistan is no exclusion, of course, and this year the drought kind of hit very hard on agriculture. You know, first in winter they were talking about something unprecedented cold. So you remember we were talking about it. So it was super cold in winter. They call it abnormal cold or something. Now it is the vice versa. So from the worst calls in the recorded history, now they're talking about the worst heat waves. So, and this is happening only during 1 year. And when I looked into the heat map of our countries, you will see that they will be or already are the most affected by the shortage of water. And the problem in Uzbekistan that it's just like a shortage without any hope, you know, at some point. So if then you don't have any water resource for desalination, for example, if you live in near, I mean, if your country like borders the sea. So it's getting problem is getting kind of bigger. In big cities, drinking water is still available. The president says, kind of a continuous saying that providing water is his number one priority. But this is like talks that are continuing for many years. Yeah, so which kind of getting worse and worse every year, not getting better. So in agriculture, what they started doing in the large, in a wide kind of scale, they're trying to collect the rainwater in these ponds covered with plastic. So these artificial ponds. So this never been the case before. Now they're doing it. They're talking a lot about this dripped type of irrigation. We had also wrote about investigated this issue. It's also kind of very poorly conducted and very bad quality of these tubes from China. So it's not like after that Uzbekistan is kind of becoming Israel in agriculture, yeah, with drip irrigation. It's getting worse because of that. So yeah, and irrigation systems are very, very obsolete from Soviet times, very old, very bad. So that's it. You know, it's long, long, big story. You know, we can talk about drought and the fact for hours.
You know, can you also tell us a little bit about dust storms in Uzbekistan? You know, when they started, how frequent they are?
Yeah, the dust storms, especially, you know, it was something okay and like usual for the regions bordering Turkmenistan or like the regions in deserts, but now we have it in Tashkent. Yeah, so they're very kind of a people when they see dust storms for some reason. People in Uzbekistan think it's because of booming construction in the capital. They believe it's just the dust from the booming construction. And maybe part of it is true, but something like this is becoming ordinary thing, you know. So we had the first bad dust storms in capital Tashkent, I think 2 years ago, and now we have it every year, you know, several times a year. So it's kind of becoming more frequent. How that affects the city long term, I mean, the health of people, it's a different issue. They also talk a lot about losing a lot of green areas due to this construction. So basically this, I don't know what's wrong with our Central Asian leaders, especially maybe in Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan. For some reason, they hate trees. And on one hand, they say they like trees, they want to make it green. On the other, they just cutting everything. This is a mystery for me. Maybe they're from another planet, I don't know. But it's just, I don't know, nobody could explain to me why they need to cut down the trees. So in this worst climate.
Okay, great. Thank you. And since we got on that topic, I want to give Nurzada a chance to speak about that too, because this has been a big concern, and certainly in Bishkek, right? People complain about the fact that there isn't enough green areas. Are they doing anything about that?
I think it's really the problem very common for all our Central Asian countries because of this drought climate. We need trees in order to make it living condition in the cities. And you know that during the Soviet Union, Bishkek, former Frunze, and also Tashkent and Dushanbe and all other cities, they were green, and we were very proud of it. But it's also really changing, and because of this new constructions booming, and there is also this construction is happening without maybe with well-planned manner. I mean, we don't know that what is the general plan of the city. There a lot of trees getting cut, and also it's connected with the road reconstruction. But the civil society is raising a lot of question about it, and they're trying to save the trees and as much as possible that we actually keep trees in a way that, or we plant the new trees in a way that it makes a shade, and it makes also the some climate in order to be able that there is some moisture in the air, and then the city is actually the breezing. So I cannot say, unfortunately, that there is a lot of things is happening because that greening is not happening in 1 year. You have to, you need the several years in order that this new planted tree is becoming the really like grown up big trees, which is actually the bringing hold of shade and oxygen. There is a new parks, organized, but we don't have that much actually the trees already, which is big and bringing that benefits to the citizens. it's drastically changed since the Soviet Union, if the comparison that how much, for example, green area we have per person. And according to some data of the civil society organizations, it decreased actually the 17 times. So which is, I think that already shows that some understanding that how much actually that we are already lacking of the trees. And this is also very important that how actually the cities will be, I mean, that it will be the good environment for the living, you know, because, for example, you know that Bishkek is located in the, it's close to the mountains. So we suppose that there is like fresh air comes in the evening, in the nighttime from the mountains, and it's actually the blue through the city. And then there should be the, actually the, some trees planted from the north side of the city. So there will be no like warm, like sandy air blowing to the from the steps. But this was the, actually the planning during the Soviet Union. And now I'm afraid that we are not following most of the standards on that.
We're talking about water and power problems in Central Asia this summer with Alisher Sadiq, the director of RFARL's Uzbek service, known locally as Azadlik, Farouk Yusufi, the director of RFARL's Turkmen service, known locally as Azadlik, and Nurzat Abdurasulova, president of the Unison Group, a Bishkek-based strategic advisory firm on sustainable opportunities. You know, and Nurzat, I'm going to start out with you again because you're upstream. Let's talk about energy. How bad is the energy problem that they've had to declare a 3-year energy emergency in Kyrgyzstan?
We are quite in the big lack of electricity supply. So it's actually that this electricity supply demand is increasing every year. And especially it's getting worse with these last years of the droughts, which is happening in our countries. And because of that, most of the electricity generation happens in the hydropower stations. Now we have a problem that there is not enough water filled in our reservoirs where we can actually generate electricity and also provide the water for the agriculture needs to the downstream countries. Our main water reservoir, Toktogul, which is total capacity of the 19 billion meter cubic water, is filled currently about 12 billion only. And this is the almost into the very close to the crisis. One, because we are in the middle of the summer when they actually that there should be, we suppose that there should be a lot of water coming melted from the mountains, but still we are quite lacking with the water. And this is the bringing the huge problem because you know that before we used to say or our like energy statistic was showing that we have a energy surplus in the summertime because of that we have a generous water supply. And now we cannot say that because we have an electricity scarcity in the wintertime. We have electricity scarcity in the summertime. And this is the, because of the also electricity demand is increasing and because of the heat and heat as well. So this is the bringing already into the situation that well now we have a lack of electricity. And this is actually the big challenge for the economic growth because now it's also been very difficult to maybe for the new investors in a way that there will be no electricity capacity available. So Kyrgyz government will be working on that in a way that diversified electricity supply through the renewable energy sources mostly, because Kyrgyzstan is quite rich with the solar energy. Solar energy capacity. We have also some capacity for the small hydropowers. And we have also wind and geothermal resources. But this is all need to be developed, you know, because there is some few existing small hydropowers and then just a few projects also developing will be developed on the solar and wind. But it really takes the time and then also some quick decision-making from the government side. And this 3-year emergency plan is also connected with that we need to really within the 3 years maximum to make it happen, all the realistic renewable energy projects in the country.
Okay. And,
within that, I will also include that maybe we need to think about it also demand side, not only the supply side, you know, because we have to think about it, how much is our demand and how much is energy intense. Because in our countries, I believe that it is the same for Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, that our countries' the energy use is very energy intense. And there is a huge actually the potential for the energy saving. And use of energy efficiency use is very important. And I think that our government policies should focus not only about the, how to actually the increase that supply of the energy, but also how to actually the, effectively manage the demand side in a way that we have the same electricity is actually the efficiently enough for the existing demand. Because it's clear that we cannot build that this needed capacities very quickly in 1-2 years, but we need to make sure that at least that there is a public awareness about how to save the energy, and this is the, and also there is actually the good examples from the government facilities as well that how it can be managed in energy and resource efficient way.
Thank you for your comment. Alisher, I want to move to you because let's follow up on this and problems with energy this summer in Uzbekistan. You know, I was struck that recently there was an article by Uz Daily that was talking about that they were going to have to shut down the electricity of the Uch-Tepe and Almazar districts in Tashkent. And according to the article, this was in order to provide consumers with stable electricity. Which kind of was strange that they're announcing they're going to cut you off so that they can provide you with stable electricity. Are there blackouts? Are they common in Tashkent and are they common across Uzbekistan?
Yeah, it's a miraculous place, you know. if Kyrgyzstan just now and started kind of a or stated about state of emergency, we have never stated state of emergency for like years now with electricity. And people in why I'm talking about capital Tashkent, because it's you've been there, Bruce. It's the place where people would never have these problems with drinking water, with electricity, and it's big capital, and it was never sort of something a matter of their concern. Yeah. So, and I use. Back, like, even 10 years ago, I used to say, if situation would continue like this, we will start feeling it in capital Tashkent. You know, I'm talking about capital Tashkent because the regions outside capital Tashkent is just, there's no point about even talking on about electricity there. It's something like comes and goes when it wants. So it's not something, you know, which government provides on regular and I don't know undisturbed manner. So we have this in Tashkent a lot, especially this year. They say, you know, it's due to increased consumption, and the government, whenever something lacking, it's always due to increased consumption. You know, it's not due to increased corruption, so or due to lack of management or mismanagement. It's always like, and then let's hunt down these people who steal the gas. You know why we don't have gas? Because people stealing the gas. It's not because we stole a lot of money and asked that led to reduction of the production. So it's not very they don't, you know, complicate it with this, you know, with the real reasons for all this. And the usual, they just say, oh, we have a potential to save, to, you know, to spend less water, let's shut it down, or let's shut it down kind of electricity for a while, because we need to save it. And by the way, there are people who stealing it, and they show these people on TV. You know, it's big news when they find these bad people who steal the electricity almost like they stole the whole electricity of the country, you know. So that's kind of how it works. But all our investigative reports, you know, take it about the gas, yeah, when or take it about the, you know, the drought and the government's reaction to it. It always shows like the underlying big problem, which is mismanagement, corruption, embezzlement on the very, very top level. So that's unavoidable, and it's unavoidable talking about any area of economy in Uzbekistan or any social thing in Uzbekistan. It's unavoidable to bump into this big elephant in the room. So what are they spending all their money these days? You might think, oh, for electricity or for irrigation systems to upgrade. No, they're building a new Tashkent in the most fertile lands, irrigated fertile lands in the outside Tashkent now. They're building new Tashkent. It's a multi-billion project between two rivers, Chirchik and Karasu. Instead of saving this land for agriculture, which is irrigation, given the rise of population and the increased number of people, mouses to feed. No, they're just building this new capital to host their elites. What it's officially announced that the new capital will host government offices, elite schools, hospitals, and so on and so forth. So that's where the money goes. So it's not going to irrigation, or at least I haven't heard about multi-billion-dollar mega project to upgrade the whole irrigation system in Uzbekistan. So that's not, we're not hearing that yet. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Farouk, can you tell us a little bit about the power situation this summer for people in Turkmenistan? I mean, if there's anywhere in Central Asia where people really need air conditioners, it's Turkmenistan. And yet we hear that they're having outages in all kinds of places around the country.
Yeah, they're having outages. We report about this on daily basis. Just today we reported about burning down of an outdated electric substation in Leba province. Turkmenistan has 12 power plants, most of like all of them like powered by gas and steam. I think 51 gas turbines and another 40 steam turbines. The power is generated naturally by natural gas in Turkmenistan. And one would think that would be enough to provide the population of 4 million, maybe even less, with electricity, but it's not happening. And most of that electricity is for export. They export to Afghanistan, Iran, and Uzbekistan, by the way. And one indication that the government does not want to provide its population with electricity is that they don't want to upgrade their electricity grid, which has been used, as I said, it's outdated and it's been used since Soviet times. And the one that burned down a couple of days ago was built in 1980s, according to our correspondent. So they produce a lot of gas, a lot of electricity, but the population is not getting it. And in previous years, Ashgabat was better off than other regions of the country. But this year, especially in this cold winter, last winter, extremely hot summer, they are getting blackouts very regularly. Sometimes those blackouts last more than 24 hours. So the situation is the same as in other countries of the region, if not the worse.
Okay, we're getting close to the end. Thank you, Farouk. We're getting close to the end of the show, so I'm going to give you everybody a chance to make last comments. But I also want to pose a question that what efforts are the governments in your country, making to try to address this problem? And are they keeping in mind the fact that, with the exception of Turkmenistan, the populations of Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan certainly are growing? And so is there any evidence that the projects that they have to provide energy are not only capable of dealing with the current population, but the populations of the country 10 and 20 years from now? And I'll start with you, Alisher.
Yeah, you pinpointed to the very, very kind of important topic. So exactly. So this is what I said, what I meant, that the growing in the situation of growing population, we are seeing only very sporadic news about the construction of new hydropower or launching of new thing. What they do now is somebody told them that solar panels are the best. Yeah, so now they're forcing all people to purchase solar panels. But when you talk to experts, they say it's not how it works. You know, by installing a solar panel on the top of your roof, you are not really, you know, helping economy or yourself. So it's bigger thing than that. So now every farmer is, or every entity, and they're now forced to purchase solar panels. It doesn't matter if they're connected anywhere. The only thing that matters, when president comes to that region, he sees that these solar panels there. So that's, they want to basically, how do you say, to kind of lay the solution of this problem onto people themselves. So basically, people themselves are the cause of this problem, because you are too much. Second, you are stealing. And third, if you need to buy a solar panel to get yourself electricity. This kind of approach, you know, it's not like the government is doing its main commitments in this energy sphere. So this is one thing. And of course, you also heard this horrible news from today. Yeah, a young woman who stuck in the elevator in Tashkent, suffocated to death because of electricity outage, and that's kind of she couldn't get any help, and she was just literally baked in this elevator. So that's the most discussed topic. Of course, people are angry, but this type of news we would never hear like a couple of years ago. Yeah. Why would somebody just stuck and dies in the elevator? It's like horrible. Yeah, that's it, Bruce.
Okay, thank you, Alisher. Farouk, to you. Turkmen government, I mean, I can remember years ago, right after Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov became president, he was talking about those vast tracts of Turkmen land where no one lived, and they would install solar panels all across the place, and they had this amazing solar potential and everything. Are they pursuing anything like that at all anymore, or are they encouraging people to get solar panels or use windmills or anything?
No, unfortunately not. Like, it was just... As you said, it was just in the beginning of Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov's rule, but they talk about it just for the sake of talking, but no such project is in the works. At least we don't know. At least the official media is not talking about this. So yeah, no, as you rightly pointed out, the population of Turkmenistan, unlike other countries of the region, is not growing but is declining. According to the sources, of course, the government recently announced that the population of Turkmenistan surpassed 7 million, and it's not. The least populated country in the region anymore, because it's all overtook Kyrgyzstan's population, which is sources, they are denying it, and they are saying this is just outrageous lie. There are no projects to fix the situation, like with energy, and these problems are the root cause of the
of the declining population and other problems too. Like, and as Alisher made a very interesting point that they blame the population, that's the people themselves. Just a couple days ago, we had a report when the government authority, officials had meetings with the employees of public organizations and told that it is the people's fault that Azad League is reporting about all these problems. If people didn't whine, then Azad League wouldn't have anything to report about. So that's a very, very interesting situation when the government creates all the problems and then it blames the peoples themselves.
Oh, classic kill the messenger philosophy. Okay, Nurzat, we're going to leave it to you last. And you know, there was some interesting point that Alisher and Farouk brought up was the fact that the governments tend to blame the people for this. And certainly we've heard this from the leadership in Kyrgyzstan.
Before you go forward, Bruce, last week, one of the kind of a top politicians in Uzbekistan blamed people for poverty. So he said, poor people are just, you know, lazy. It's their problem. You know, that's what they say. Even the poverty is on people. So you're poor because you're bad. You know, that's kind of the message they're sending.
Wow, that has echoes of the Karimov era all over it. You know, Nurzat, can you speak a little bit about that? You know, and mention in your final comments that, you know, what the government, are they accepting blame? Or like I said, I remember that some officials, including the president, have said that Kyrgyz use too much electricity. The people in Kyrgyzstan use too much. It's so cheap that they don't think about it, you know, and so they're partially to blame. But also, to get to the bigger question of, you mentioned some of these renewables. But in Kyrgyzstan's case, they're trying to bring in some of these other renewable sources, wind, solar, at a time when it looks like there's going to be less hydropower produced in the country. Can it meet the needs of a growing population by transfer, really substituting one renewable for another?
I think it's a little bit, the situation is different in Kyrgyzstan because you know that we experienced several times the public revolutions and our public statement is still very, I would say, powerful or listened by the government side. So in this way that it's not so easy actually that you start the blaming the public about all the challenges which this country has. But on the other hand, that is true that everybody's talking about low tariffs and which is actually the not easy to change the situation because it's becoming so political. But the government, they talk a lot about the generation side. I mean that increasing the electricity capacity, the generation. So it's more about that how actually to make sure that there will be the enough electricity capacity, new capacities. So we will be generating electricity in a way that there will be the enough now and then in the future. Because we clearly understand that there is actually the huge demand every year, because according to the national strategy documents, it's already demand is increasing every year by 5% from the existing level, and this demand is so plus every year. So you can imagine that how it's actually getting bigger and bigger. So Kyrgyzstan was always relying about the hydropower sources. And that's why they are talking about now to building, of course, another big hydropower capacity like Kambarata 1. And then another option which they are seriously considering is about nuclear energy. They're building the smaller nuclear capacity in to make sure that because they believe that this is actually the good energy source, which will be not depending from the climate change. But in other hand, that also there is a civil society opinion about it, that the nuclear is not the solution for the Kyrgyzstan because of the seismic situation, because of the risk of the using of this uranium. And certainly because the nuclear power stations also require a lot of water for their cooling. And this is actually also the I think that the decision which should be there, think it over and over again, you know, to make sure that this is the good and safe and beneficial project for Kyrgyzstan. About the renewable energy sources, yes, there is a good capacity. We understand also that because of all these droughts and climate change, probably not that much of the small hydro projects will happen. They should be actually well investigated, I suppose. But there is a huge effort by the government side that to attract as much as investors who wants to build the solar, wind, and hydropower in Kyrgyzstan. We don't see it that so much that so far that already there is actual projects happening, but maybe we are just in the beginning, in the start, because like I think Alisha said that we are just stating that Kyrgyzstan has that this emergency situation in energy. Even we had this crisis already. I mean that we had that this we see the coming the crisis in few years before. And now it's probably, it seems that everybody's already understanding that this is really serious and it's becoming the new, I mean, that new big challenge for the economy and for the people's well-being. So from this point of view, we are talking about a lot on the generation capacity increasing. Power capacity increasing, but I believe also that we have to think about it also how we can work with the energy demand management in order, for example, to improve the energy efficiency. And one of the things which is Kyrgyzstan is doing, maybe comparing for other Central Asian countries, is about energy efficiency in buildings. Because Kyrgyzstan has a dedicated primary law about energy performance of buildings, which is now required by the government, is obligatory that all the new buildings which will be built from now should actually follow into the minimum energy requirements class B. And I can say that it's actually that we're well on the implementation side, but at least that we have it on the low level. We have it already on the implementation side that is a requirement by the government agencies. And then there is already independent energy auditors which will be actually doing this energy certification of buildings. And this is also makes little hope for us that there will be some work also happening with the developers, with the and then also building. I mean that energy huge consumers in order to also optimize the energy demand from other side, because there is a economy is always about that supply and demand. So we need to make sure that there is enough supply and there is a well managed demand, and then this makes actually the good balance for the country benefits.
Okay, thank you. Obviously, this is a big topic, and we can go on and on about this, and I'm sure we'll be back.
Yeah, exactly. Super big topic, exactly. We didn't even scratch the surface of it, yeah?
I know. So I'm going to have to make sure I can invite you all back onto the program again real soon. I'd like to think for positive developments, but it's probably the opposite is going to be true here.
You know, there is like objective reasons, yeah, global warming, all this stuff. Reduction of water supplies, and on the top of it, countries upstream building more dams, yeah, reducing more water. Then Afghanistan is taking 1/3 of Amudarya for its, you know, needs and to tackle drought. So, and on the top of it, you have a corruption which derails every project, you know, big project, and everything is must be investigated. They started building kind of a, photo electrical station, and also we don't know who is building, what is this offshore company, who is giving the contract, who is bringing these solar panels. So that's that's making obviously things even worse.
No, I agree. Transparency is always a huge problem with the energy sector in general across Central Asia, whether it's renewable or hydro, fossil fuels, hydrocarbons, those kind of things. But I will let you go because it is Friday, and it is, I've been holding you for 55 minutes almost right now. Thank you, Farouk and Nurzat and Ali Shir, for being on the program today. And a big thanks, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting RFARL's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.